Welcome back, everyone, to an episode of The Money Seat, the show where my guests put me, the host, on the hot seat. They ask me 5 questions related to finance and money. They have not sent me these questions beforehand, so I'm hearing them for the first time as you are. And I also don't edit it out, so I can't really make myself sound smarter than I really am with some strategic editing. So hoping this makes for some interesting conversations, and without any more delay, I'm excited to bring in my next guest here, Adam. And why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Thanks, Ross. So I'm 32 years old. I currently work in finance, but more corporate finance, so less investments, more, you know, just making money for a business. I work in healthcare right now. So that's a little bit about my work, but on a more personal note, I was recently married.
All right.
And I live in Deerfield, Illinois with my now wife and our French bulldog named Albert and our two cats, Daisy, the girl, and Gray, the little boy.
I'm assuming since you introduced your dog and your two cats that you don't have kids, right?
No. Albert and the cats are only animal children.
Okay, that's good. I'm sure they keep you plenty busy.
Oh yeah.
So what school did you go to? I'm assuming if you're in finance, you probably have undergrad and possibly a graduate degree.
Yeah. So I went to undergrad at Wisconsin-Madison. I got a degree in finance and economics from there.
Right.
And I worked in corporate finance in retail for a few years. And then I went back to school and got my MBA from University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana.
Okay. And did you get that done recently?
Yeah, that was about three years ago. So I've been working for a little bit over 3 years. Since graduating.
Have you found that the MBA has kind of helped you in your professional career?
Somewhat. MBA has become a kind of a controversial degree nowadays. I think I'm glad I got it.
Okay.
But I don't know if it's the only path forward now. I think it's really beneficial if you go to one of the top, 10 schools. You're getting your MBA from Harvard, you're gonna do well.
Right.
From public schools, a lot of them have been shifting more to online. So U of I, for example, I went in person, and now they don't even offer an in-person. It's all online. So it seems like they're shifting that way, and perhaps it was a smart shift now that we have a pandemic.
From someone who also has an MBA, I get it. I think the MBA has a lot of value for some aspects, if what you want to do, and also for online, I think that's really great to allow people to keep working. And in this day and age, it's a huge deal to like enroll full time into an MBA program and show up every day. I don't know how you'd be able to have a job and do that at the same time. So I think that's a big benefit, probably, of the online program, is what they're thinking.
Yeah, it's hard to give up 2 years of salary.
Right. Yeah.
I was happy to go to Champaign, but people would, after you've worked for a few years, probably would rather live in Chicago or, a big city.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I went straight from undergrad to MBA and did it in person because I never I never knew what a salary was. I can't imagine if I started working, then giving that back up later in life. That's difficult. But anyways, congrats on that. I know it's not an easy undertaking. Any graduate degree is serious stuff. I mean, you really put everything into it, and I know how hard that is. So congrats on that. And congrats on the recent wedding. And I'm excited for what questions you have. So let's start with question one.
Okay, question one. I have to ask it.
Okay.
I'll say the name, GameStop. Okay. What do you make of like the insane roller coaster that it's been going on, you know, for the past week. Robinhood stopped trading for a day.
Right.
It's going nuts. What do you make of this?
I'm glad you asked, and I'm also glad you asked because that's going to perfectly date this episode. We'll be just fantastic. Everyone, whenever they listen to it, will know exactly when we record this episode because this is like the hot topic of this week. And I'm going to be careful in how I answer it because in my profession, we can't like give advice about what to do things, especially on a podcast. But in terms of GameStop and Robinhood and stopping trading, I think it's very interesting because for me, I'm not a big person in short selling and shorting stocks or positions. Part of it is because I'm kind of an optimist. And to do that, you're taking the opposite approach. Like you win when everyone else loses. It's like if you go to a craps table and you're playing like the don't come or the whatever the don't pass is, right? And you win when everyone else loses. I don't gain joy in that, right? For me, the idea of that. So all these people who are bounding together who aren't professional investors to take down those like short sellers and short squeezes at hedge funds, it makes me chuckle, to be honest. I definitely don't hate it, especially when Robinhood is literally stealing from the rich and giving to the poor, and they're doing it on Robinhood. So from that side of view, you know, I don't mind it because personally, I think a lot of these hedge fund companies and these very wealthy, organized funds have been short selling for a while and kind of getting away with it because it is a very risky thing to do. And I think it's important for people to know that short selling is not for the faint of heart. And this is what happens, not to this extreme, but there's very big consequences and you could lose huge amounts of money. And I think that's a good lesson for the general public to learn that you can't just short sell stuff willy-nilly based on what you're doing. The other aspect of this is also interesting because it's a bunch of people going on Reddit and banding together to buy stocks that probably don't have a lot of fundamentals to why they're going up of what they do. And I think that's interesting because if I did that with other financial advisors, I would lose my license. I would probably be fined or disbarred from the industry. And it could be a fine or a jail time for people like us. So are what they doing, is it okay because they're not professionals? That's a weird gray area where I would say that's where we have to head caution because there's what's to stop from you of buying another stock that's worth, you know, $10 and starting a Reddit trend and making, you know, 1,000% on your money. I mean, technically, you can't drive the market like that. So it's kind of crazy because there's not a specific rule on what to do. I'm going to guess there's going to be some rules and regulations that come out pretty soon about this, and people aren't going to be able to do this anymore. But at the same time, it's a free market, and Robinhood and other places prohibiting people. Today was cryptocurrency. Yesterday was GameStop and what was the other one?
Was it AMC?
AMC, yeah. Yeah, AMC is that also seems to like, you know, you don't want to throw wrenches in the market. The market needs to be free and accessible to everyone. So I did have a client call me and ask me to buy one of those stocks, and we are able to. I got a note saying they're not prohibiting from us from doing that. But it's interesting that they are doing that. I'm worried about a dangerous slope this could go down if the government gets involved, if people start regulating investments who definitely don't have the expertise or the knowledge to do so, makes me a little worried. But the bigger picture of all these hedge funds losing money and short squeezes makes me kind of chuckle. So it's those are my emotions on it. I don't get involved in it. I don't buy and sell for the short term, and I don't do short trading or options for the most part. So this hasn't really affected me personally, but I'm sitting back and I'm think it's very interesting. To be honest, I'm hoping what your thoughts on it, especially being in the financial industry, what you think about it.
Yeah, it's strange.
That's
strange, but I think you said an interesting point that I hadn't thought too much about. But how do you regulate just a massive individual? Right. Like, you know, they don't have to get all these licenses that you get. They're not bound to the same rules mm-hmm. that you're bound to. Mm-hmm. You know, they say whatever they say currently, and they have, but it just something about it just doesn't feel right.
No, you're right. And my worry is the next step is someone who has a similar job or licenses as I do is going to go on one of these sites and just pop up and say something and hope to not get caught and make a bunch of money. And I just know this, it feels like it has a potential to spiral out of control. Where that goes, we're right in the middle of the storm. But yeah, I know it is weird. It is weird. You know, I was trying to do some research about some of these stocks and the fundamentals behind it. And I'm like, I feel like it's going to end badly. You know, these stocks in a few years when all the hype and everything fizzles out are probably going to go back to trading exactly what they were before. And some people are going to make a lot of money and more people are going to lose a bunch of money, to be honest. Most of the time, more people lose than win in these situations. The question is, who are those people, right? If it's the big hedge funds who are shorting, we don't care as much as if it's the mom pa guy sitting in the bathroom, literally on the bathroom. You could go to the bathroom and buy Robinhood. It's crazy. So yeah, it is weird. You know, I this is something I wish you could ask me. We should follow up with, you know, in a month from now and really see the aftermath of this. But I gotta think regulation's coming for something like this. So yeah, we'll see. But that was a great question. I'm glad you brought it up. I like when we have the current event to discuss. So let's move on to question number two then.
Okay. Question number two is more about your thoughts on the market overall. So, you know, we've been going through a pandemic. A lot mm-hmm. of people have lost their jobs. Like, it's hard to classify this as a good, you know, booming economy right now, but the market's up since the start of the pandemic. It took a dip. Now it's higher than where it was in February and March. Like, what do you make of this rise despite kind of, you know, normal people hurting?
Yeah, so there's always gonna be a little bit of a lag in the market between the actual economic data and growth and earnings of companies versus their stock price. And we've never had a COVID before. So what happened actually in March of last year when the market went down like 30% actually didn't surprise me that much because we were already at all-time highs and this was a jarring event. How quickly it bounced back without much fundamentals behind it actually surprised me a little bit. The fact that, like you said, we're at an all-time high, let's just the end of the year, we finished at a very like 15% or something for the S&P, something like that for 2020 is definitely shocking. I'm obviously a little worried about the short term because when you don't have fundamentals behind a lot of why stuff is going up, there tends to be bubbles and things tend to crash. The problem is, one, no one's going to predict when that's going to happen and how bad it's going to be. And so I wouldn't caution on doing too much crazy stuff. But two, I think it's going to be more industry specific than in the past, where the entire market's up and then the entire market's down. You know, we haven't seen what are they called? Travel industries bounce back, right? Just because the market's bounce back doesn't mean travel industries and restaurants and retail and manufacturing places have, or airlines companies. So it's been a very weird, the bounce backs felt like it's just tech and healthcare, right? And so it'll be interesting to see if things more move really sector specific going forward. And those little sectors like tech drive the whole market, which is kind of what's happening. But in the long run, I'm not too worried. You know, we're going to go through cycles, right? We're going to have a up and a down and the market's meh and people are losing their jobs. But eventually things will go back to normal. They'll stabilize and hopefully the stocks reflect a more accurate value of what they're worth. But if you look at PE ratios, it's nuts. And for those who don't know, PE is just price to earnings. And it means the price of the stock is an insane multiple of what the company is actually earning. And usually those aren't sustainable the long term. But I personally haven't done anything crazy with myself to invest differently, because I also know that what I'm doing, and for most of my clients, we're not taking this money out for 10, 20, 30 years. And, you know, and tomorrow the market might be down, in a month, in a year, I don't really know. But in 10 years, the market will be up. In 20 years, it'll be up. And it's just kind of how it works. You have that long-term history. So I would tell people to not panic long-term, but short-term, strap in, because I think it's going to be a bumpy ride, which is why you've seen so many people, professionals on the hedge fund side, short selling stuff. The problem is that, you know, no one knows exactly when. But yeah, I would strap in, because it's going to be a roller coaster, and be prepared for that on that end.
I won't start burying gold in my backyard just yet.
I had another interviewer ask me that, that question about, well, if everything just goes to, you know, crap, shouldn't I just have money in gold? And I was like, well, you know, if the market tanked and our US dollar became worthless and our whole market fell, I think you probably should invest in water and toilet paper as opposed to gold, because it's much more likely that we're going to be an apocalypse than, right? Like, I don't want your gold. I need toilet paper. I need food, right? I need water. The funny thing with gold is I do think it's actually a good thing to have as a small hedge in your portfolio. You know, 5% or something is always good in case things happen. Physical gold, if you like holding it, but, you know, no, it's not a good thing to just go all the gold and everything. That's probably too much of an overreaction, to be honest.
Okay, no gold, maybe Charmin.
I'm telling you, there's a reason people went out last year and they hoarded toilet paper. I mean, maybe because gold's too expensive and too heavy, but I mean, you know, you got to be practical in these things. Yeah, so that's a good question. Question three, when you're ready.
Okay, question three, I think, is, you know, will segue probably nicely from that. But, you know, what do you think about, this is personal advice, but someone in their, you know, 30s like me, or even 20s, you have a long time till retirement. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a while. What do you think of, like, what level of risk people like me should be taking on in their 401ks? Do we go, you know, super risky? We got a long time till we retire and just ride it out, hope to get some more returns? Or is that crazy?
No, it's definitely not. I would say for someone like me, who we're the same age, similar situations in life, similar industry, that I'm a 10 out of 10 in my aggressiveness in my retirement accounts. Especially if you have a little bit more knowledge and understanding of the market, which you definitely do, then you should take those risks. Because, once again, if you had $100,000 in your portfolio and a 2008 happens, right, and all of a sudden it's 50, you know that, yeah, that would suck, right? And we're going to look at that and that's going to eat us inside. But at the same time, it took 5 years for that 50,000 to grow back to 100, and then it would be, you know, 200 or 300 at this point. So as you know, being so young, if you took that hit now, you're going to recover. If you just sit there and don't sell anything, right? I mean, you know that's what's going to happen. If you were 60 years old and you wanted to retire earlier, obviously you couldn't afford that hit. But young people can, and as long as they're patient and disciplined and don't sell. Because a lot of investing isn't necessarily buying the right stocks, but it's just putting your money in and just kind of letting it go and trusting the process over time is going to earn money. And 2008 is the worst we've ever seen a year in the market, or 18 months about what it was. It's the worst we've ever seen in our lifetime, worse since the Great Depression. So if anything even like that happened, like I said, it took 5 years to come back. So if it happens in your 35, unless you're retiring at 40, you're fine. So I'd take that risk, because while it doesn't seem like a lot, if you can earn an extra 0.5% to 1% a year over 30 years, the compounding interest of that is in the tens to hundreds of thousands of dollars. by the time you're 60. I would do you could do this real quickly. You could do a little, you know, interest, you know, use one of those financial calculators and put it in and change the interest rate from 6 to 7 to 8. And over a 30-year time frame, you're going to be like, "Wow, that is huge. Huge difference if we just change the rate of return by 1%." And that's why I say you almost can't afford not to take that risk. Do you want to work longer? No. Right? Do you want to have a lower standard of living? No. Right? People want to have more money and they want to pass it on to their kids and do the things they want and retire when they want. And the money allows them to do that. I'm curious. So are you currently a pretty aggressive investor in your 401k?
Yeah, I put it in a lot of small stocks.
Okay, good.
You know, things, but my 401k has this dashboard and it has a stoplight, you know,
yeah.
Green, you know, yellow and red.
Yeah.
I always get the aggressive. So I don't know. It, what you're saying makes sense, but when you see the red, that's why I wanted to ask.
Yeah.
Does this make sense or have I gone crazy with this amount of risk?
No. Once again, it's all about the time horizon and when you need the money. So I usually tell people 10 to 5 years out, that is a very important stoplight. Very important. Otherwise, run the red, right? Go through the stoplight. It's really worthless for someone in your situation unless you're relying on the 401k money to borrow against or, I don't know, you know, do something in the short term. It's not for everyone, right? I mean, it's just a guidance. And it's important for people who are watching to know that just because I'm recommending it to you doesn't mean that applies to everyone out there. There might be people who are older. There might be people with less money. There might be people who aren't as experienced. And I would say if you're lesser experienced, it's probably better to start with a more conservative portfolio just so you feel more comfortable. But you're past that point. You understand the risk. You understand the market. So go for it. You know that if the market goes down, you're not going to just panic and sell and move to cash. At least I would hope not. So that's kind of why I give that advice. That's why I don't do that. But not everyone I work with feels comfortable doing that. And but that's good. I mean, aggressive is where you should be, to be honest. And hopefully in the next 20 years, you'll see your account do very well. And you'll be giving yourself a pat in the back when that happens. I assume the performance has done well already for you, right?
Yeah. It's given me a heart attack.
Yeah.
You have to have the stomach.
Yeah.
It used to do well, but wow, it's a roller coaster.
It does. And it's different if it wasn't retirement money. I don't do that with my regular investment account or someone else's regular investment account. I definitely say that money should be invested a little bit differently. So this is also strictly 401k retirement money too. I want to make that very clear that's why you don't want to invest all your accounts the same because that would be wrong. Like if you had, you know, $10,000 in just a stock portfolio with Schwab or Fidelity or something, that should be invested differently than your 401k because that money you might need in the short term and you don't want to take that, you know, 50% hit if the market crashes. So it's always good to kind of combine them together but make sure they have different goals and depends on, you know, your situation and all that stuff. But yeah, that's why it's always good to just, the stoplight is a general guide, but blow through it for you. I would recommend you to just blow through the red full speed ahead.
Okay, I'm blowing through it.
Good, 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 good. You'll thank me in 20 years. Okay.
Okay. Well, redo this podcast.
In 20 years. Hopefully. Yeah. Perfect.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us for this week's part one of the two-part episode of The Money Seat with your host, Ross Krause. And as always, if you have any questions, if you want to listen to previous episodes, you can go to rosskrause.com, rosskrause.com. And very excited to continue this conversation next week for part number two. And hope you have a good day, and we'll see you next week for part two.
Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC. The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professionals prior to making a decision. All performance referenced is historical and is no guarantee of future results. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested into directly. Economic forecasts set forth may not develop as predicted, and there can be no guarantee that strategies promoted will be successful.